You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Cleveland! This is for you!
All right, joining us today is Jackson Frank. You've seen his writing at a ton of different places, but Jackson, give everyone a rundown of where they can find you before we hop into talking about LaMelo Ball.
Right now, you can find my basketball content at Dime Uprocks, Fan Size and Step Back, and then I have a Patreon where I do some video work and some NBA draft breakdown and NBA stuff at large. So that's kind of where you can find my stuff at the moment. And all of that is easily accessible through my Twitter account, which is, my handle is at JackFrank_JJF.
So please go give him a follow. He does a lot of great stuff. In our show notes below, you can find thread that he did of LaMelo Ball clips, kind of an ongoing thread of his about LaMelo Ball, who is obviously going to be a big part of what we talk about with the Cavs here the next several months, just because of, you know, everything kind of going on there. But we're going to do this today, as I mentioned in the open, is we're going to kind of just poke through these things and kind of a around the horn style debate thing. I'm going to play host. We're going to facilitate the conversation. Here's my first question, and whoever wants to take this first, please go ahead. Where do you have LaMelo in this class? And for you, in this class, does he really do enough interesting slash potentially great stuff, whatever skill you want to quantify that as, to separate him in a meaningful way from other people in the class? And just kind of how do you basically feel about LaMelo Ball 2020 NBA draft prospect?
You want to take this first, Evan?
Yeah, go. Do you want to take this first? Do you want me to take this
all
first?
Yours. I'll follow your lead. You're part of the hosts. I will defer to you.
Well, I appreciate that. I have LaMelo at number one on like a consensus big board, at least for me, just because what he brings to the table in terms of playmaking is obviously appealing. There are concerns with his scoring ability and some of what his inabilities on defense, but I feel like that can be fixed. And I kind of hold out hope that maybe, just maybe, he can tap into some of the defensive potential his oldest brother has, and for some reason that works out. But I have LaMelo number one on my board, and if a team like Cleveland, Chris, you know this pretty well, and people who listen to the show know pretty well, if you're a team like Cleveland who is starved for talent, you can't be too picky, even though you have drafted two point guards 2 years in a row. And if you were to take LaMelo Ball, and if you had him on your big board, if you're the Cavaliers, you'd have him at number one, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Obviously, since I don't cover a team or anything, I don't have a team center big board, but I also have LaMelo first. I think the biggest thing that, you know, impresses me and kind of distinguishes him from other guys in this class is just he kind of has a unique approach to the game. He's able to get to these spots on the floor, like key spots on the floor, like the free throw line, the paint, not the free throw line in terms of drawing foul, but just spots that kind of defenses have to key on you in a way that most other guys can't get to. Obviously, he has strength and burst concerns, but an incredibly deceptive handle, really good lower body flexibility, which allows him to kind of contort his knees and his ankles and whatnot in weird ways to avoid defenders. And, you know, like I mentioned with that playmaking ability, I really think that's a really impressive kind of combo of an ability to get to different spots on the floor basically whenever he wants and capitalize on that, because he's far and away the best passer in the class. And has some really impressive passers in the class, which is testament to LaMelo above all else, not really an indictment of some of the other guys like Tyrese Haliburton or Killian Hayes.
Okay, so
I guess let me ask
as the follow-up to both of you.
Okay.
Is he in your – Evan, obviously the answer for you is pretty clear, but is he like in a tier sort of by himself? Is he with other people in that tier? Like, where does he kind of fall among other guys? Like, is, I mean, obviously you both seemingly think high of him, but is he someone that is actually like in a tier by himself in this kind of supposedly not great draft class, or is he kind of muddled in with a bunch of other number of guys and like there are strong arguments for him to go other places?
For me, he's a guy that like is firmly my top ranked player, but he's not in a tier of his own. Now there's still 3 months or whatever until the draft is scheduled to take place, so that could definitely change. And I've grown a lot more intrigued and optimistic about LaMelo overall in the last few months, so I could see myself by September having him in a tier of his own. But he is a guy that is, like I said, is firmly my number one guy, but isn't head and shoulders above. It's not a Zion type thing or even a Luka type guy, where it's just there's no conceivable argument or argument that I could see made for someone else to be over him. I like him a good bit more than some other top guys like Anthony Edwards and Killian Hayes, but he's not way better to the point that I would have him in his own tier.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I've said this before and on the show and just on Twitter and everywhere else that the top three, maybe even top five, there are a lot of good things you could pull from these players, but there's some concerns as well. And if you're in that position picking in the top three especially, you're going to get a prospect that has some lumps to them, and LaMelo's no exception to that. But like Jackson said, I still have number one on my board, but he's in the same tier for me with like Anthony Edwards and Killian Hayes, like Jackson said. And then even if you want to look at our guy Denny as well, and then I mean James Wiseman isn't a favorite among draft Twitter folks, and especially our friend Trevor Magnotti, but he's held in high regards and high on big boards for other analysts and outlets out there as well. So I mean you have to have him up there as well, and he has his concerns to begin with too. But there's a lot could happen between now and then. Like LaMelo could really show out, he could really impress a few teams, and he could actually bring something and show actual improvements and, you know, squash a lot of the concerns people have associated with him coming out of international play that firmly puts him in his own tier, and which is fine. But I mean, this isn't a draft class where I feel like Jackson said, like, this is not a Zion or a Luka or someone you could peg as the quote-unquote guy as the runaway favorite for the number one pick.
So who else would you guys have in your top tier? We've mentioned a couple guys, Denny Adija, Killian Hayes, you know, James Wiseman, you know, you have Anthony Edwards, you know, I know some people really like Onyeka Okongwu. I know Evan and I kind of don't think the Cavs are super high in him for some different reasons, but who else is in your guys' personal top end of this draft class to go with our guy LaMelo?
For me, it's so I have LaMelo 1, Anthony Edwards 2, Killian Hayes 3, and Onyeka Okongwu 4, and that comprises my first tier. And my second tier is pretty big. I think it's got 7 or 8 guys, but that's the first tier I've had for I want to say maybe 3 months. I don't have an exact number on it. I know maybe I tweeted about it a couple months ago, but I don't think that's officially when I made that tier. But that's where I'm at, and I think that's kind of a, for me, it's not necessarily that I can interchange all of them, but it's generally the idea that I think, you know, I could see any of them being the best player in the class, and I would have a tough time seeing anyone outside of that tier being the best player. So a lot of things have to go right for anyone 5 or higher, 5 or lower, to be the best player. Whereas any of those 4 that I mentioned, I could see a pretty conceivable outcome to them being the top ranked guy in this class in 5 years, 7 years, however far into the future.
I have LaMelo Ball 1, Onyeka Okongwu 2, Killian Hayes 3, and then Denny Avia 4, and then, I mean, it's kind of interchangeable. I feel like there's like a couple players you can mix and match with it where maybe you can make a case for Anthony Edwards, but Anthony Edwards does have his concerns with me, and I just feel like, at least in terms of the Cavs, he's a player the Cavs should avoid. But yeah, no, in Tier 2, it's kind of wide open. Like, you can sell me on Tyrese Halliburton, you can sell me on Isaac Okoro, you could sell me on, I really like Devin Vassell. I think Devin Vassell is a very safe player if the Cavaliers are in the position to be picking him. Sadiq Bey has his upsides as well and intrigues me, and I don't know, there's a lot of, I feel like this isn't a draft, and Jackson, you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, right? There could be a potential for a team to hit a home run somewhere in the draft, but I feel like it's just going to be a lot of teams maybe hitting a single, possibly a double, and they're not really going to get franchise altering talent, but they're going to get a nice foundational piece or a nice rotational piece out of this draft. And maybe there's a guy out there who could be the next big thing, but it's easier just to err on the side of caution when it comes to this draft class.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think there are some guys with some fairly intriguing upside in that second tier. I'm still a pretty big believer in Cole Anthony. You mentioned Devin Vassell. I like him a good amount as well. I think I have him seventh or eighth. Even Danny, I'm a little lower on, but I wouldn't be surprised if Danny becomes the fourth or fifth best player in this class or something, given his production in pretty impressive context at a young age. But the thing that really is interesting to me with this class is pretty like with even in the entire lottery, there are simple ways to understand why a guy might reach his potential and why a guy might flop, which is fascinating to me. You know, I think it'll be a draft that is really easy to allow you to kind of influence your philosophy and how you rank guys. Because we've talked a lot about LaMelo and been really kind to him, but the easy way he flops is this shot never comes around. He never really develops that functional strength he needs. And he's just kind of a really impressive playmaker, but can't ever warrant the on-ball usage to maximize that playmaking ability. So it's a really interesting draft from a philosophy perspective and a lot of fun ways to go about it and rank and value different guys.
Yeah, that all sounds right. All right, let's take a quick break here, come back, and after the break, we're going to talk about his defense, because I think that for me, at the very least, is a black kind of spot on his resume. I don't quite understand. It's kind of a black hole for me rather than a black spot, but that's coming up right after this. Okay. Here to me is something that I think, for me, when I think about LaMelo and his potential, Jackson, you mentioned a shot, but when I think about his defense, I feel like this is one of the things that, for the Cavs in particular, kind of makes him someone you really have to like or someone you don't, because if he becomes a really bad defensive player, that's a problem. Because I just think, especially for the Cavs, and you have Darius Garland and Colin Sexton, and your team needs a defensive boost. LaMelo Ball, if he comes in, he'll probably be bad as a rookie, but if he cannot make that leap within a couple of years, that puts, I think, a pretty serious cap on him. And for all of some of the concerns there are about Lonzo as an offensive player, that guy's a very, very good defensive player. Just a stud guard who can defend a bunch of different positions, and I think is underrated, honestly, on that end of the floor based on how we talk about it. So, with that in mind, how far is he away from being an actual defensive player? Can he be kind of a versatile guard in the vein of Lonzo, or is that something that is going to be too much to ask of him, or is it just an unknown for what we know about him right now?
I would never expect him to be a Lonzo level guard defensively. I mean, Lonzo was incredible from the outset. I think some of his metrics as a rookie, I don't know off the top of my head, but whether it be steal rate or defensive real plus minus, defensive player impact plus minus, things like that, were really incredible for a rookie. But the way I look at it is kind of from a macro sense. You have a 6'7", 6'8" guy who's a really, really intelligent player, especially offensively. I have a tough time seeing him be some huge negative defensively. I know he had his concerns this year, and there's been some reports, not off the reports or rumors, but he's never really been coached defensively until he entered the NBL. And I think you saw that kind of rear its head at times this year. There's one play that sticks out. I'm sure it happened more than once, but he was on the weak side, kind of the weak side guy in a pick and roll, and was just like face guarding this guy in the opposite corner when a pick and roll was happening on the right wing, and just completely forgot to, or didn't know to tag the roller to the hoop. And it's a pretty glaring issue on his part in that play. But that's the kind of thing where it's like that's something being coached away. If you can teach him how to position himself better, like, hey, like, you got a pick and roll here, you rotate in, you kind of play between the roller and your man in the corner as a shooter, that type of thing. I think there's a lot of low-hanging fruit for him. He had a tendency to make the right play a lot off the ball, but would, gamble for a steal or lunge in the wrong direction and kind of compromise the smart decision or the important rotation he had made. So for me, a lot of it is low-hanging fruit, especially off the ball. On the ball, he has pretty big issues. He gets beat on drives a lot. He struggles to navigate screens. But I'm someone who subscribes to the idea that off-ball defense is more important because you can affect plays rather than just players more often. So I think right now, defense is definitely not a strong suit. But I don't think he's just some huge glaring issue that will never be good is an irreversible flaw. I think there's definitely a path in being a positive or neutral player defensively.
So Evan, as the Cavs expert on this podcast, when you think about him in that context, let's say that sort of being sure that he can be solid, but maybe not like all defense in some way, and that it's just something that it will be a work in progress for him. Does that impact your interest in him as a Cavs fit? I know it's a weird draft and everything, but I mean, how much of a concern is that for you?
I mean, I have to like take stock in the fact that LaMelo Ball is only 18 years old, and again, he's that in itself just says he's a teenager and maybe defense isn't his biggest priority, and he's such a cerebral and talented high IQ basketball player on the offensive side of the ball that like Jackson said, like there's just a lot of times where you see concerns, especially on ball defense, where he was more or less bullied. Him and RJ Hampton both in the NBL were more or less bullied on the on ball defense, but like LaMelo has shown potential at least to be a good off ball threat, and he just has to work on the defensive lapses. And I just think, like Jackson said, I haven't heard that he wasn't really coached defensively, but that makes a lot of sense. And I think maybe if you put him in a system like Cleveland's, where JB Bickerstaff is known as the architect of Cleveland's defense, which isn't great to begin with just because of personnel and everything else. I mean, it is telling, like you and I both know, Chris, that David Nwaba was the team's best defender 2 years ago. And then
the team this year spent like a lot of its time being like, Alphonso McKinney's our best defender. And that in itself is just like, what are we doing here?
The coaching staff and Alphonso himself told us that the coaching staff thinks he's the team's best, at least perimeter defender.
No shade, but like that's a problem if you're trying to be decent.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like Tristan Thompson's no slouch, and Andre Drummond has the potential if he actually cares, but there's a lot of young guards, and like we joke about Kevin Porter Jr. being the next Jimmy Butler on here, but he still has his lumps of concerns defensively as well, and a lot of potential to grow. Like that's just the growing pains of having a bunch of young players on your team, especially Colin Sexton and Darius Garland as well, who were bigger negatives at least coming in like in their rookie years defensively. Like Colin's showed potential on the defensive side of the ball, but like I'm not too concerned about LaMelo's defensive ability, at least coming in. If you give me a few years into his rookie deal and then we're approaching an extension and he's still absolutely abysmal defensively, you have to kind of figure something out at that point, obviously, where you hope you can make it work. And off the ball would be a lot of fun, though. And when we did that mock draft special with Brad Rowland, he talked about how fun Trae Young and LaMelo would be together if LaMelo could tap in a little bit of the defensive potential, just because he's just such a big player to begin with. I don't think he's going to be a world beater like his brother, but like I said, if he can at least tap into some of his natural ability and some of the flashes that he's shown as well, I think he'll be at least competent enough, especially off the ball.
Jackson, do you have concern? Like, let's say if you're looking at this from a Cavs perspective, do you like have a concern that if you're going to have him in there and you're going to have him kind of in all of this, just kind of in this circumstance with the guys the Cavs have, I mean, is that something where that is a concern about, like, okay, he's just going to get put in the pick and roll a ton by good teams and just get roasted, and like that, if it's him with Darius Garland together, that's just going to happen over and over again. Like, I mean, is that something that lumps in you're concerned with him as a potential Cavalier?
I think that's reasonable. I think, yeah, he definitely could have some issues, you know, on the ball, like I mentioned earlier. But I think at least with Cleveland, like I don't see a lot of players on the roster currently with the Cavs. Now, obviously, I didn't watch a ton of them. I watched enough to kind of have a general idea and get.
Wow, Jackson hates the Midwest.
I was gonna say you're not missing much, my man. It's good.
I watched some of them to at least, you know, I can speak about them in some fashion. Far less.
Yeah. If you want to learn about them, just cue up Andre Drummond shooting 3-pointers, then hate your life afterwards.
But I think there aren't a lot.
You're just
of,
like, okay, it's Chris.
I don't think there are a lot of guys currently on the roster that factor in any type of long-term plan. So I think ideally, if you get LaMelo and he's kind of the guy you want to be your lead guard long-term, with this kind of awesome shooter and next to him and Darius Garland and this guy who can attack the rim and Kevin Porter, and then a kind of a bench scorer maybe in Colin Sexton's ideal role, you can kind of insulate them with some other pieces. That are more defensive minded, you know, maybe next year you go out and draft a defensive man in the wing. Maybe you go and get a guy like Jalen Suggs with the 8th pick or 10th pick, a guy who's a really impressive defensive guard in the 2021 class, something like that. And then you sign a defensive-minded center in free agency in 3 years that can kind of, you know, compensate for some of LaMelo's pick-and-roll defensive issues. So for me, it doesn't worry me a ton because I just don't – I think even if he has his own issues, I think there are avenues long-term to when LaMelo's in his prime – 7 years or whatever, that you can kind of insulate him fairly well if you build the roster properly. And obviously, that's kind of, you know, that's a lot to ask. You know, hit all these other parts, but I think that would be a minor concern of mine. I really focus on more LaMelo being an impressive off-ball defender that can turn teams over and get out in transition, where he's an incredible playmaker and get open threes for Garland and let KPJ attack the rim. So to make a long answer short, I don't have very big concerns about LaMelo defensively on the Cavs roster.
Okay, that's fair. I tend to agree. I think just the potential versatility with him, if you can coach him up, and I think to J.B. Bickerstaff's credit, he really simplified back the defense once he took over, and I think that was one of the better adjustments he made. And I think just with – if Andre Drummond is your center – and, you know, your bigs are Kevin Love and him and Larry Nance going forward, assuming that Tristan goes elsewhere, which isn't a lock, but seems kind of to make sense for everybody, that would seem to be a way to do it. And I think if you run a simpler defense, whatever you want to define that as, I think that's probably something that can help LaMelo. And if he doesn't have as much of the playmaking burden just because of Sexton and Love and Garland and KPJ and some other guys, you know, and Drummond, frankly, that maybe will allow him to put in more effort on defense. I mean, we know that, like, you look at Pascal Siakam this year, and this is obviously a much higher degree of an example, but when guys have to do more on offense, they just don't do as much on defense. That it is very rare that you have a Giannis who is just wrecking things on both sides of the floor. That is an anomaly and speaks how great Giannis is, not that, like, Jason Tatum, who's very good at defense, or Siakam, who's still very good at defense, but maybe slips a little bit when they're doing more on offense.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's valid. And even some of the on-ball concerns with LaMelo defensively are, again, this low-hanging fruit idea. Like, he just rarely gets in a stance. And obviously, he's not some incredible lateral mover, but he's upright so often. And it's just like, if your center of gravity is higher, it's more difficult to navigate an on-ball screen. It's more difficult to slide with a guy. So I think a lot of it's just going to be getting the right developmental system and having a coaching staff that really teaches him the ins and outs of defense and rotations and decision making defensively to really, you know, tap into this really smart and impressive 6'7" guy who flashes incredible intelligence offensively, because I think generally that's an encouraging sign for defensive projection. Maybe that's a philosophy I change in 3 years, but for now I think someone who's really smart offensively is someone who can make a difference defensively.
Yeah, sounds right. All right, one last break and then we're going to come back, talk about LaMelo Ball, his fit on the Cavs, which is really what you guys came here for. And that'll be that up next right after this. Okay, here's the thing. We don't know where LaMelo's going to go. The draft lottery hasn't happened yet. There's that little bit of smoke, which has gotten shut down, but has been out there for a little bit, about his camp wanting to be a Knick. But let's say the Cavs are in a position to draft LaMelo. Do you like the fit? I know you guys both have him number one on your boards. Are there guys whose fit you like a little bit better for whatever reason? Where are you guys at on this?
I mean, like I said, Cleveland is a team that is star for talent. They do have promising prospects in Kevin Porter Jr. and Colin Sexton. And, I mean, Darius Garland, I'm not really ready to sell the ship on just yet because he more or less didn't play the season healthy and was just dealing with recovery this entire season. So if he looks as bad next year, that's when I'll be concerned. So if Cleveland goes with the best player available based on the position it happens to be first overall, LaMelo Ball is the player you take in that stance. I mean, there are some concerns, obviously, taking a third point guard 3 years in a row. Kevin Love's going to get some PTSD to his Minnesota days, which, Chris, did you know that in 15 more games in the regular season, Kevin Love will be a longer tenured Cavalier than a Timberwolf? Just wanted to share that fun fact. So yeah, a little troubling there, but if we're just going on, if the Cavs weren't drafting for talent and they were instead drafting for fit, Devin Vassell, Jackson probably pronounced his last name correctly when he brought him up. I think he's a good fit. I like Onyeka Okongwu, even if Andre Drummond opts into his player option. He's a long-term fit, I believe. I like him. Denny, obviously, is a good pick because the Cavs need as much help on the perimeter as they can get, especially just at the three in general, and he can play the four as well, which is a little fun, but like guys like that make a lot of sense for Cleveland if he weren't drafting for talent. But again, the Cavs are a team that are starved for talent, and LaMelo Ball is the best player in this draft class. You take it, you figure it out. And like I told you, Chris, a Cavs executive compared this to kind of like the Josh Rosen, Kyler Murray situation where, yes, they drafted Josh Rosen the year before, but they get Kyler Murray, who they believe is the best player in the draft, and then they figure it out from there. Obviously, Cleveland doesn't have to trade one of the 3-point guards immediately in that situation, but again, you figure it out as you go. Rebuilds aren't a super fast process. You want to do this right the first time so you're not in this situation in a few years. And if LaMelo Ball's, you believe that guy that can get you out of this situation to begin with, you take it and you don't look back.
Yeah, I think that's the sentiment I would agree with as well. I don't think essentially, it's too early to just completely abandon the idea of Garland or Sexton or KPJ being involved in long-term plans, but I don't think they've shown enough to this point to really kind of significantly influence how you approach, ranking guys. Whoever you think is the best player in this class, you should take. Whether it's LaMelo, Killian Hayes, Onyeka Okongwu, Anthony Edwards, that's the guy you should prioritize. I think what's kind of interesting, even with this Cavs roster, is Garland struggled this year, but he's someone who looks like he could be a really impressive shooter. Had some awesome pull-up flashes this year. Shot 35 or 36% from three, a lot of it off the dribble. And then you look at a guy like KPJ, who was a really impressive finisher and slasher this year, and those are kind of two concerns for LaMelo. Getting to the rim on a consistent basis, finishing there, and shooting off the dribble and being a credible floor spacer. So, obviously those are things that I believe in with LaMelo, but you have two guys kind of around him right now that can maybe mitigate some of those offensive concerns and provide you with a well-rounded offense. You have a guard who can shoot off the dribble, you have a guy who can attack the rim, and then you have this awesome playmaker. So even if both those guys don't factor into a plan in 7 years, even now you have guys that can kind of help bring LaMelo along and cover for some of his offensive deficiencies, and let him do what he does best, which is to create for others and compromise defenses with his handle and ability to get to these different spots on the floor.
That's right. Okay, but here's my alternative option. Let's say the Cavs obviously will not have a lot of money to spend this offseason, but they'll have some room to work with. And I think Evan would agree with this, that their biggest needs are sort of getting some playmaking help and getting some wing help.
And it's a big man depth because Ante Zizek is no longer with us.
Yeah,
he's not dead. He's just overseas.
Yeah. Okay, but let's look at the options here. So let's say you could get a bargain basement wing, whoever that is, a 3-and-D-ish type wing, plus LaMelo or Denny Adija, and then like an Alex Caruso type player. Those things are obviously very speculative. I'm not saying that Alex Caruso, is a Cavs free agent target. I know that he actually told ESPN that the only other team to interview him ahead of the draft was the Cavs, so there is at least some connection there dating back to the past.
Well, I hate to burst your bubble, but Caruso isn't a free agent until next summer, so it doesn't even matter.
Okay, well, regardless, let's just say some type of player like that.
Yeah.
For me, if you can tell me, just because LaMelo obviously I think has the higher ceiling, but depending on where you pick and depending on how much you want to, like, if you're worried about overlap, if the Cavs do really believe in Sexton and Garland to some degree, I could see an argument, especially if you really like Adija, and maybe that's harder to do and fall in love with someone like that, considering there's not going to probably be in-person workouts this year and he has to come from Europe anyway. There's a lot of logistical issues amid a pandemic, but is it crazy to think that getting the wing like Adija and then getting a guard in free agency / playmaker in free agency as a stopgap to give the young guys time to develop is a better or at least equal option to the opposite of LaMelo plus a veteran free agent wing?
I don't know, because His free agency class isn't that great to begin with, and the Cavs are working with the mid-level exception, and then their vet men deals, and
but it's like you could get a Rondae Hollis Jefferson who at least does shit, and you could get.
I know, but
there's going to be like some veteran guards on the market.
There's going to be some veteran guards on the market for sure, and I think the veteran guard the Cavaliers are going to sign is Matthew Dellavedova to a vet min deal because Coach JP Bickerstaff and Coach Matt and the safety valve for when the rookie or the young guards, can they aren't rookies anymore, fall apart on the court. I think Coach Matt will be there. I like that nickname. I'm going to start rolling with it. Derek Jones Jr., I feel like, is always the whispered option. I feel like he's been linked to the Cavs quite a bit. I mean, Josh Jackson, the Cavs could take a flyer on if they wanted to. I feel like he's available for cheap. Rondae Hollis Jefferson, if Tristan Thompson doesn't take the MLE, is an option as well. But you also have to think the fact that the Cavs are technically bringing in two rookies this year. Dylan Windler never suited up for Cleveland. He played a little bit for the Charge, and John Boeheim's brutal training camp method and summer league practices more or less just took away our ability to see Dylan Windler play this season. So, and the Cavs are super high on him, and they view him a bit as a Joe Ingles type role. I mean, obviously that's the comparison he's getting, but you got to see what you get when he's actually out there. But I don't know. I feel like I'd take LaMelo than maybe peruse the options in free agency to see what you can get on the wing and maybe in big man depth as well. But because that Dylan Windler option in your back pocket's always a convenient one because he will be a part of the rotation for Cleveland next season.
20-year-old rookie Dylan Windler. Dylan Windler, I love you. Jackson, what do you think?
The Joe Ingles Dylan Windler comp. I wonder where they pulled that one from. I don't know.
Maybe they don't even have similar haircuts. What could it be?
Yeah.
I can't quite put my finger
quite
on it.
Yeah, exactly. Quite put it on there.
So I am a bit lower on Denny than Evan, and just compared to kind of how mainstream views him, I have him kind of toward the back end of my lottery rather than kind of in the middle or toward the top. So for me personally, I would prioritize LaMelo, and then a wing or whatever else you want to go with in free agency. And I would have a tough time seeing, you know, kind of the value prioritizing Denny over the other. I kind of get it, but it would be just a tough viewpoint or decision for me to really support or even reconcile. So for, like Evan said, I would just go LaMelo. I think if you don't want to go LaMelo and you're on the clock at one or two or three or whatever, and I would even go Killian Hayes, before I go Denny. I know they're different positions again, but that's kind of my line of thinking. I just think they don't have a guy who really, you know, has primary ball handler upside, and that's kind of what you need you don't even have to have a ball handler, just someone who can run an offense through full time. And that's just, I don't think the Cavs have anyone like that on the roster. So I think Hayes and LaMelo are two guys who have that potential, so I'd prioritize them over someone like Denny, who projects to kind of slot in nicely next to someone else and be a secondary player with some impressive defensive impact as well.
Is there a wing that you do have maybe higher than Denny that you would say is at least somewhat interesting? If you're like if you're like a little lower, and maybe like you're picking between like Killian Hayes and then this wing. Is there a wing you have higher on the board than Denny that you would say is kind of worth a longer look?
The only one that really comes to mind who's like a true wing would be Devin Vassell, as Evan has mentioned, and the Vassell versus Vassell thing. I'm not even positive. I never heard him say it, so I don't know exactly what the ruling is there. Hopefully we get some clarity at some point. I've just heard Vassell on broadcast, so I roll with that, but I'm not the authority on that. But he would be the main one, and then a guy who's kind of a really weird, kind of funky, high upside guy is Alexei Pokuševski. He's kind of like a bigger wing, though. He's 7 feet tall, but rail thin, kind of power forward type, has impressive shooting versatility and some passing upside along with defensive playmaking. But the Cell would be the only one that I'd really, you know, consider a wing that I would have above Avdija. But even then, I would have a tough time taking him over LaMelo or Killian Hayes even. So, but again, I mean, like, it's really tough to, you know, talk about these things because we don't know how the lottery will shake it. You don't know if the Cavs somehow stumble to five for an unfortunate reason or if they have the first pick. So for now, yeah, it would be LaMelo or bust kind of in a vacuum. But things are subject to change, and so that's kind of my stance. But you know, I feel confident in it, but it's one that really requires more information that we can't receive yet to really fully flesh out.
That's fair. And before we wrap things up, I am curious. I've been picking the brain of draft folks just every now and then asking them this. If you took Cleveland's rookie class from last year, which was Darius Garland, Dylan Windler, and Kevin Porter Jr., how high would you have those three in the if they were options in this year's draft class? Like some guy I spoke to the other day said he'd have Kevin Porter Jr. as the second best player in this year's draft class. So I'm just kind of curious where you're at.
I would probably have Porter Jr. in my second tier, which runs from 5 to 12. Then Garland in my third tier from, I think it's 13 to 18 or 19. I don't recall exactly. I just worry about kind of an undersized guard who can't play on the ball all the time. Even if, like, I'm fairly optimistic about him still. But I think it's, you know, kind of in more of a complimentary role. Windler, it's been so long since I watched him play. We don't have any rookie film to, you know, price into the evaluation here, but
Jackson, you don't remember the almost half court shot he took in the Salt Lake City Summer League? It got Cavs Twitter buzzing.
I actually do maybe recall that, or I saw a highlight of it, but okay. Windler would probably be in that next tier, which is pretty wide. I believe it ranges from maybe 19 to 30 something, early 30s. That's kind of where I would go with it, but it would take a lot more in-depth things, watching some more of those guys in college, especially the first two, who get such limited film with Garland specifically, and then even KPJ with some of his suspension stuff and not playing every game for USC. So you kind of had a limited view of those guys, but that's kind of my first instinct would be second tier, third tier, and fourth tier. But that could definitely change if I thought more in-depth about it and, you know, compared them to all the guys in those tiers.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fair. Jackson, thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. Just again, give everyone a plug about where they can find you and what you have going on right now.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at JackFrank_JJF. I'm good about posting on my articles and different an assortment of basketball clips on there from time to time. You can find my specific work at Dime Up Rocks, Fan Size of Step Back, and then my Patreon, my Twitter bio has a link to that. I usually do, I think, one free article video breakdown a month. So if you aren't in a position to subscribe, you can always get some content there. But for now, that's where you can find my work. Hopefully that's subject to change at some point. I can break into the full-time gig world, but working what we got for now.
He's very good on the Twitter and everything he writes. He's also, like Evan and I, just clearly infringing on rights with his progressive politics on the Twitter.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to dwell on this too much, but do you get a lot of crap from people from you telling people to just wear a mask when you're out in public? Because apparently that's like a serious offense, and we've gotten reviews saying that we're infringing on people's rights by asking them to wear a mask.
I don't know. I don't think so, really. I'm sure. I went through a pretty significant phase where I lost a lot of followers and I was tweeting about protests and whatnot. But I think everyone now has kind of learned if they want to keep following me, that's going to be part of the experience. So it's kind of stabilized again. But sometimes I get nothing nasty, but some replies or DMs of people firmly disagreeing with my viewpoints. But that comes to the territory.
That's fair.
Once you reach a certain amount of followers, not even like the level I have, once you even reach 500, 800, 1,000, you're just going to get people that disagree with things you say. So you kind of learn to live with it, and that's just the way it goes.
That's fair. And for everyone listening, please follow Jackson. If you go on his Twitter, I have it pulled up right now. He has pinned that he has no Twitter game. It's completely opposite of the truth. Just follow him. It's definitely worth your time.
Yeah. That's a tweet from 16-year-old Jackson during high school, and back when he had probably 50 followers or something like that.
Yeah, Twitter in high school, tough look for everyone.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's some funny, funnily embarrassing stuff on there.
Yes, yes. Well, that's going to be it for today's show. Have a good weekend, everyone. Wear a mask. Check out our site. We'll have two episodes up this Friday just due to Evan and I's weeks this week, book club and this one with Jackson that you're listening to now. So if you haven't checked out our latest Vintage Cavs book club, please go listen to that now. And as we've noted, we'll be back to 5 days a week next week because the content lords demand it. But Evan and I will be back then. Have a good weekend. Wear your mask. Be safe and talk to you soon.